I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello, hello. Welcome to Thursday Afternoons in the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski, about to join us on the phone lines. Coming to us on this very wet day in Southeast Alaska, all the way from Juneau, though. Before we dive on in, we want to say thank you to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite In the Garden. They are out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, with season-end annuals to help fill out your garden, and organic black gold, potting soil, compost perlite, and bales of potting mix. With delivery available, the Flower Farm, 772-3464.
Nothing the homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice.
Okay, and we are joined on the phone by the one and only Ed Byarski. How are you, Ed?
I am wet. I get to take off my wet hat. This is a, well, yeah, it will be a two-hat day. We'll see if it becomes a three-hat day.
Oof. There you have it. That's an important, sogginess measurement technique there. Oh, boy. Yeah, it's pouring.
We got a good bit of rain here, too, and luckily I live on a hill, so it drains off mostly.
Yeah. Oh, that is lucky. So what are you working on in your garden, then, in these conditions?
Well, I'm still trying, partly because of the rain, I'm trying to get plants, outdoor plants, at least supported, so the rain doesn't beat them down. And, you know, one of the most common things that needs trellising or supporting this time of year are the delphiniums, which it seems like mine aren't yet ready to open, but they're already 3.5 to 4 feet tall, so it'd be good to get some supports in around them if you don't have them next to something semi-permanent. Because it seems like when the flowers start to open, then we get rain and wind, and they get dumped over, and then you're out there, then I've been out there at least, cutting off those bent-over branches and putting them in vases for ourselves, or to share with, which I guess is a nice thing, but I'd like to be a little more choosy about which and when I do the selecting for bouquets.
Right. Yeah, that's true. You don't want to leave the choice entirely up to the rain clouds there.
Yeah, and some of the other stuff just, you know, and that are kind of easily knocked over, fall over, at least outdoors. Begonias benefit by some support. They've got rather brittle stems, so the wind and rain can certainly snap those right off, and you stop getting flowers and stuff from them until they grow some new stuff. Dahlias are another one, again, especially with those big, heavy flowers, which can really collect a lot of water, and same thing, over they go. And peonies are still another one that really would like to have some sort of support. There's all sorts of them, whether you use some alder sticks and some twine and wrap around them, and they kind of grow up through that, and they can kind of hide that. And of course, there's commercial wire, various and sundry bent wire supports for them. You can use rolls, hoops, whatever of fencing, kind of short, at least up to when you know how tall your flowers are going to be. You want to at least have the flowers above the supports, pretty much. So it looks more aesthetically appealing that way.
Makes sense.
You know, the other ones are, some of the others that need support of some sort are the different kinds of vines. Clematis are a really good one. I mean, I've got clematis, which some of them have been blooming now for a month or more, and they're on trellises. The biggest challenge with those usually is because they're a semi-woody vine, most varieties are. So they're challenging to, if you want to do some pruning of them, they get quite overgrown, and we've got some like that. Where this past winter, it's such an incredibly large mass of vines on the trellises that aren't as sturdy as they're supposed to be, obviously, because we get a bunch of snow on top of them and they fell over, and then we had to come spring once the snow disappeared and we had to stand them back up. So they're in dire need of pruning severely, which was going to happen here shortly for the variety that we have. Others should not be pruned at this point, so that we can build some sturdier trellises for them for long term into the future.
Gotcha. Okay, well, that's a lot of propping things up to do.
Oh, there's lots. I mean, if we're growing, I'm growing hardy kiwis. And again, I strongly recommend, I mean, some of the little wimpy trellises that are maybe locally available from your hardware store oftentimes don't do it for some of these plants, which are vigorous grower. Better, you know, you're better off using something, I mean, building supports out of 2x4s and panels, and that can be fence panels, it can be fog wire panels, which may be available to you, or even using the panels that are used for concrete reinforcing mesh, like in sidewalks. That's a good material to use if you've got a frame to support it. And you can even use concrete rebar, half-inch rebar, to make frames and arches and all sorts of quite creative trellising systems. With it, it bends easily. It's a challenge to cut, but you know, if you have a sawzall or a grinder or something like that to cut them, a hacksaw is kind of slow, but works. So you can get quite creative with your trellising system. And certainly my kiwis, they'll climb almost anything. So I've got some of them are planted underneath. Well, an alder tree grew among the kiwis. And they are quite carefully climbing up into that alder tree, and so I have to top the alder tree so I don't get out of reach of my ladder so I can go up and pick them later in September.
Wow. That's cool. I like, that's a good image.
But other stuff, again, like we mentioned the clematis, they will cheerfully climb up into a shrub or a tree, and then you can get other flowers coming out onto those, on those trees. And it's still another one that I know there's several folks in Mindy, I know, has a couple of climbing hydrangeas that are climbing up into her trees, pine trees, as I recall. So again, you've got a pine tree with flowers on it up there 15, 20 feet up in the air.
That's awesome.
It is. It is quite spectacular to see. And the same thing with the clematis, because there's lots of different colors of those. The climbing hydrangeas are generally white. But again, it's a different look. I mean, very different, obviously, since pine trees don't normally have flowers.
Nice. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. Well, that's a good, kind of overview or glimpse of the many, many ways you can build supports, trellises, and kind of places for these climbing, growing things that need something sturdy to lean on.
Sure. A few more. Honeysuckle. I don't know if you've got, I think I remember honeysuckle down there. Certainly there's quite a few of them around here. And that climb vigorously indeed. You know, they twine around whatever support you give them, and if they don't, they'll reach out and grab you, it seems like at times. And hops. Some folks grow hops. Both there's a standard green leafed hops, and there's a golden hops, which is more ornamental. Me, at least. And again, they need some support. They do, they grow up completely and die back completely in one season, you know. So they have perennial roots. I mean, they've got, can develop big tuberous roots underneath, underground. But they will grow in good conditions. Some of those will grow 15 to 20 feet of vine a year once well established.
Wow.
And which is what happens, I don't know if you've ever driven through Washington and Oregon and other places where they have hops orchards for harvesting for beer making, but they've got these huge trellising systems with wire, you know, big posts, you know, the size, almost the size of telephone posts, poles, with wires strung, and then the people come along every fall they cut, they're using twine, they just cut the twine down, haul it off, that the hop spines climb up onto, and then they tie up new twines for the hops to climb up onto again. So it's labor intensive to get them up. They've got to be up off the ground so that the cones which they produce can be more easily harvested.
Ah, makes sense. Yeah, you can kind of picture the whole Pacific Northwest just bursting in these fast-growing hops, which explains the trend in overly hoppy IPAs for the last few years. I don't know, just joking.
Yeah, better.
Yeah, there's definitely some hops growing on trellis down in Papke's Landing area, too, that are really striking looking when they're full and grown in.
Yep, on their big arch over their entrance, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an impressive stuff. So again, and if you wanted to, you can actually mix vines. I've got on one of my, I've got a hemlock tree that we topped up at 12 feet tall. We planted a climbing hydrangea on it, and then we also, or next to it, and then we also planted a clematis. So the two, essentially, the climbing hydrangea has kind of sticky pad like roots that grab a hold of the bark, like ivy does down in the Pacific Northwest. And then the clematis can climb up on the climbing hydrangea because its leaf stems twine around some other support. So again, you can have kind of a mixture of different kinds of vines growing together reasonably well as long as you give them some fertilizer each spring.
Gotcha. Is there any, do you need to do much kind of pruning and controlling to keep them in balance when they're growing together like that, or just kind of let them do?
At this point, we are letting them be. And again, a certain amount of pruning can be helpful just because it gets to be such a thick mass of growth. Well, I mean, the birds like it. They nest in the vines, you know, which is not a bad thing either. So we're letting them grow. It's kind of a free-for-all out there. Certainly the commercially for kiwi vines, at least, and like I said, for the hops, kiwis are very deliberately pruned, much like grapes normally. Hmm. They're kind of free-form. We pick whatever we can reach, pretty much. Hmm. But then there's some of the other things. I mean, we don't usually think about them as being trellised, but for apples, the espalier apples, which are trained on essentially large fences, sturdy posts, kind of like I mentioned for the hop spines. So you have sturdy posts, usually with galvanized wire in between. So branches are trained out along these wires for ease in harvesting. Usually they're using dwarfing size trees. So no ladders are necessary for picking the fruits. And the support and the training of the branches helps in encouraging more flower buds, which of course leads to more fruit in the long run.
Wow. That makes sense.
These are very old techniques. Go back to the French, 1600s and earlier, where these trees have been trained, and there's all sorts of wild patterns. So even when once the leaves fall off, the branches are quite a decorative effect. If they're trained on the white on posts and wires to look at as essentially a living fence, I guess the best way to put it.
Wow. Yeah. Gosh, I want to go look up some of those traditional techniques. I can just begin to imagine what you could do. And this is mostly apple trees that get trained like that?
Apples and pears are the two main ones. Other plants are also. And again, one of the reasons and places where this was done, of course, we don't have a whole lot of castles in the neighborhood here, but around castles and around rock walls and brick walls, which were walls around gardens, these trees were trained to be on the south side of the walls, which then held some heat and acted as support for the trees. So that way, again, so there are additional benefits, and using, basically trying to use every bit of square foot of land that they have within the walls, protecting to keep, whether it be two-legged interlopers or four-legged pests or otherwise, out of their gardens and out of their orchards.
Sure. Wow. Interesting. Okay.
And then, of course, once we should move into, look at moving into our greenhouse, where we need to be supporting our beans, full beans and regular beans, maybe scarlet runner beans or fava beans, as well as tomatoes, you know, the indeterminate tomatoes that want to grow to be 5 to 10 feet tall or more, but even the determinate tomatoes benefit by support to keep the fruits up off the floor, off the ground, where they get air circulation. And again, they can be better exposed to sunlight, also. And of course, cucumbers, squash, again, more stuff that really needs support because we don't have that much acreage to let them sprawl over the ground like my parents did back in Upper Michigan. Cucumbers took up a row that was 15 feet wide by, 80 feet long, and they just sprawled on the ground. Well, I don't have room for that.
Right.
So it's more productive use of space, too.
You know, that kind of reminds me of a question that came up this week with, and it's about room, and it's about tomatoes and plants like that. If you've got a tomato plant growing fast this time of year, it's probably not bearing fruit yet, but outgrowing the space that you have available for it, what are some reliable ways to hold it back from breaking through the top of your greenhouse or whatever?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. And I'm seeing mine are not too tall yet, but I can see already that, I had this expanded space, so I planted more tomatoes, and then I planted some more tomatoes. I've got too many tomatoes side, not so much vertically yet. I mean, there's some of them are 2 feet tall and reaching for the sky. Again, choosing the variety makes a big difference for your planning for it. And some of this, even just the choices that you make, and you may look at, the seed packet tells me these things are going to grow to be 3 feet tall. Well, sometimes they're just plain lying to you. some of the things that may be down south, they only grow 3 feet tall, may grow to be 4, 5, 6 feet tall, kind of like sugar snap peas. They grow to be 12 feet tall and more if you keep giving them, if they have the space. So you can pinch off growing tips, but then you've got side branches. So do you have room, again, to support the side branches, which is where, your fruit is going to grow also. So that's something to think about, how much space you have. And of course, again, if you can look at these designs I mentioned for the espaliered apple trees, and you could essentially set up a similar system for your tomatoes and have something like depending on how big your greenhouse is, I guess, have horizontal wires that you are loosely tying your tomato vines to grow horizontally or diagonally, at an angle rather than straight up and down.
Oh.
So, again, you can get, creative if you want, of course, within the limitations of the space that you have.
Right.
You're thinking, okay, I should have built this greenhouse taller, wider, longer.
Yeah, if you run out of space altogether, is your tomato going to resent you if you top it a little bit as need be?
It's going to keep trying to grow more fruit.
Yeah.
And later on, normally we talk about, okay, it's time to start pinching off those developing, new flowers because they aren't going to ripen, but it's too early for that yet.
Yeah.
I just a few little tomatoes, and I'm out there every day, and I need to do it again today, tickle the tomato flowers with a little stick or something to stimulate pollination, at least. But again, production, either you have more tomatoes and they're too tight together, or you have fewer tomatoes that have more room to spread out and grow better fruit, essentially. So I don't know that they're going to resent you. Will they produce less, or will they produce smaller fruit? Hard to say. But again, need a certain amount of leaves. You can only pinch them back so far because they need so many leaves to ripen, to produce and ripen fruit.
Right. Yeah.
So again, this time of the year, I'm looking at, I'm looking at having to maybe prune off, as in take out some tomato plants, because there may be too many tomatoes.
Wow.
That's a terrible thing.
Wow, yeah, it's an interesting problem to have, yep. So we did just get a question and a comment. One was a comment saying, there is a household in Petersburg with espaliered apple plants on the side of their house facing toward town, and they get quite a lot of fruit from them. So that's nice to hear about classical technique bearing good success here locally. So thank you for that comment there. And then also, we just got a question called in, and it was jotted down and run into the studio here. Here's the question. It says, I have a rhododendron that's half dead. If I move it, will it fully die or have a chance?
I'll give a definite maybe on that one.
Right.
So first, prune off, yeah, any of the dead stuff, prune it off. That'll make it easier to move, of course. Although you might leave some, leave some pieces of it attached, branches, short branches, if nothing else, to give you handles for moving it. Rhododendrons normally are pretty easy to move, easy to dig up to move, just because they have a fairly tight, fibrous root system, holds the soil close to the plant. They don't have these long roots going out in all directions, like an apple tree, or like a spruce tree, or an alder tree. So, you know, right underneath the edges of the rhododendron, tips of the branches, that's as far out as you have to dig up the plant. You know, and usually you can lift it up, and if it's small enough that you can roll it kind of over onto a tarp, or onto a child's sled if it's really smaller plant, and move it over into a new spot, put it back in and plant it. Make sure that you've got plenty of organic matter. Make sure that you give it lots of water. I mean, that's going to be the critical thing for it. And really not, if it's half dead, a lot of folks' first inclination is to, oh, here, I'll fertilize it, and hopefully it will come back. And that's a lot of times not a good situation. If it may be a little yellow or it's on the, but otherwise lots of leaves on it starting to grow, some fertilizer may help, but otherwise the transplanting, if you're transplanting it away from an area that soil was bad for some reason or drainage may have been bad, you know, if that one side of the rhododendron was particularly wet, that could cause side of the rhododendron to potentially die back. Or if there were some wood ashes or lime on that side of the rhododendron, again, that may cause it die back too.
Hmm. Okay, so step one, prune away the dead and dying parts of it. And so it sounds like you're kind of approving of the idea to move it, and then the main considerations in moving it are move it to a place that it will be able to thrive, make sure it has lots of water when you transplant it back in, and what kind of fertilizing regimen do they want to put in that situation?
Not much. Very little fertilizer. I mean, a little bit of compost underneath. I do not recommend, you know, we've kind of talked about this before, don't use chicken manure compost. Because again, that tends to be sweeter, have some lime in it. Really just a minimum, and mulch. Certainly make sure there's plenty of peat, and I know Petersburg has a lot of peat there to potentially use, mix with sand, good drainage, good and sunny spot for it. Maybe a little bit of liquid if you've got the mir acid, which is Miracle Grow for rhododendrons. You give it a little, very light dose of that in the hopes of stimulating a little bit of growth, but very, very light. Because again, if it's part of the plant is already dead or dying, giving it more fertilizer usually isn't the answer.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So it kind of sounds like one of the themes of the day, as far as this caller and a lot of stuff in general in these rainy times, is just kind of drainage considerations, management of drainage, and...
Yeah, we live in a rainforest.
Yeah.
So very definitely, and that's, again, if you're looking around your garden and you see if there's spots where the water is pooling up, and you've got plants in there, well, I mean, hopefully either we are making choices about what plants to put that will tolerate wetter conditions. Other plants, we've got to either move them or improve the drainage. And whether we're digging ditches, putting in some drain pipes, mixing more sand into our peat soils and raising mounds, raised beds, raised boxes, you know, all of that tends to help with most plants outside of the, some of the yellow iris like the wet conditions. Some of the primulas, the late-blooming Primula florendae, they like wet conditions. The red-twig dogwoods, they tolerate quite wet conditions, or high-bush cranberries. But again, you're limited. Skunk cabbage, you want some ornamental skunk cabbage, although they're tough to transplant.
I guess that's a good point, yeah. There are plants around here that thrive abundantly in the extremely wet.
Yeah, just take a look out on the, you know, take a walk out on the muskegs. Although, again, it's fun to just to see the differences there. Just the little hummocks, just having a couple of inches of elevation and the differences in the plants that are out there, too. So, again, that certainly makes a difference in the garden as far as what you can grow or where you can grow it, or in your yard, I guess. It may be, hopefully you don't have a wet, unless you have a water garden or a water feature of some sort, a pond, maybe, at the edge of your garden.
Today I think it's more like pools, only because of the terrible rain. But I love that point that you just raised, that you can see out in the muskeg the diversity of plant life in relationship to drainage conditions. And you can kind of take some information, a little biomimicry there, learning what does better where, and then kind of applying those ideas into our own growing spaces.
Absolutely.
Well, is there any parting thoughts you want to leave folks with, as we've come so easily to the end of our time here? But any homework you want to leave folks with for the next week?
I would say look in your garden to see where there are open spaces and plant some more seeds or plant some more plants if you're lucky enough to have some to plug into the open spaces. That's what I'm doing now with extra Swiss chard plants, lettuce plants. I've still got some broccoli plants and other things that are going to get tucked into places where I have openings. There's lots of time and there's lots of growing season. Hey, we're just barely about to hit the solstice.
Mm-hmm. Right. Summer hasn't even arrived, so lots of growing ahead of us.
I hope, yes. We need more sunshine again.
Agreed. Well, let's leave it there for now. Thank you very much, Ed Byarski, for being with us here on this Thursday afternoon in the rainy part of the rainforest. And we'll wish you breaks in the clouds for the next week, and we'll talk to you again next Thursday afternoon.
All right. We'll see you then, Arne.
Okay. Take care then.
Bye.